Hi, this is Dominic Pace, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
If they don't go for this, we're going to have to get out of here pretty quick, Chewie.
You found something.
You found the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
What a piece of junk.
I'm your host, Greg McLaughlin.
He's as clumsy as he is stupid.
Join me as we discuss Star Wars trading cards and card collecting.
We need a statement, not a manifesto.
We'll talk about sets from the original vintage.
No, the one I'm pointing to.
All the way to current releases.
This?
Yes.
All right, let's get started.
Commence primary ignition.
Welcome back, or if this is your first episode, welcome aboard. My name is Greg McLaughlin, and this is the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Good show for you tonight, as my guest is Steve Brownlee of Ray Gun Cards. He is from Glasgow, Scotland, and a big Star Wars fan and movie fan who kind of began making his own custom trading cards as a cheaper way to seek out autographs by mail, since the shipping and custom fees, well, they often dwarfed the cost of getting the autograph itself. Little by little, he's created more and more cards for actors who were on the convention circuit and for movies that didn't have card sets of their own. Since more people were asking for his cards, he's opened up a storefront so people could get them more easily. We talk about growing up with Star Wars in Scotland, trading cards, and the process of making his own entry into the card universe. We will get to my interview with Steve here shortly, but I need to get some homestead keeping out of the way.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
All right, several items to get through on the homestead keeping tonight, so I will try to get to and through them as best I can. Leading off, we are in day four, just basically wrapping up of the Digicon 2020. This was the digital event put on by Topps across many of their card trading apps, including Star Wars Card Trader, Disney, Marvel, Skate, Bunt. I know that Slam and Kick also had some events going on as well. There was a lot of great cards in the Star Wars Card Trader app. There was some of that original art put on by Derek Laufman, the Kevin John cards. We had the Mandalorian Watch Party cards, which were really, really nice. And there was also that meld aspect to them as well. There was that, I believe Brandon called it the Summer on Hoth base variant that was going out. There was some child animated cards that were out as well. Like I said, kind of wrapping up today. But I think it's been a great event. I like that each app kind of did its own little thing. I liked the in the Bunt app, you did have some base variants. There was also some interesting kind of superhero type sketches of some of the players, which I thought was really kind of wild. In the Marvel app, I especially liked the cards that kind of looked like the action figures and had kind of a front and back. There was also in the Disney one, they'd had those video and audio cards with John Ratzenberger, who's done all those iconic characters for the Pixar movie. I thought those were some really inventive cards, and I really liked, you know, kind of using, you know, all the clubs in the bag as far as, like, if you're going to make a digital card, what can you make it do? I thought they really pushed a couple barriers there, and I really would like to see more and more of that coming out. In the socials, I saw a lot of good activity in the Twitter feed, and I saw some trades happening across different apps. So I was kind of excited to see my friends get in there. I hope you had a chance to get some cards and do a little trading of your own. Once again, Card Squadron on Twitter, or you can find me in the Star Wars Card Trader app at CornFedTech. I do hoard Commander Pyre, so if we are both chasing a set, you don't have a dupe that I need, throw me some Pyres. I'm sure we can work something out. We also have, I want to bring to your attention, I don't talk about this a whole lot, but we do have a couple of new outlets that I have seen for the podcast. I was able to register with TuneIn, so you can, if you are talking to the lady in the can, and if I say the A word a little too loud, the echo in the kitchen will sound off. But I have been able to call up the podcast on the lady in the can or the Amazon Echo, Alexa. But I have seen it also pull from the iTunes database. And so I saw where if I asked, play the Rebel Base Card Podcast on TuneIn. I'm waiting for the Alexa to go off. If I say that, it'll play the most recent episode. If I just say play the Rebel Base Card podcast. I think I got the previous one, so I'll have to do a little more experimentation to see, you know, what the kind of the deal is. But I do like the fact that if you have one of those ladies in the can around your house, you can listen to the podcast there if you're away from your phone or you're doing other chores and so forth. I also saw that I was indexed on Podcast Addict, which is a fairly big podcast player on the Android platform. I know that I had early on had some folks who were asking about that. You can also listen to on Android the Google Podcasts as well. But I always like options because if you're on iOS, although the Apple Podcast client is pretty nice, I listen to mine in Castro just because I like to move the playlist around, and it seems to handle a number of podcasts well, so I can kind of manipulate my playlist to kind of suit my needs there. But you can also listen to it in Overcast. I know a lot of people listen to it in Spotify. So I like the fact that the podcast is getting out there. Of course, you can also click the link in the in Instagram because I'm on Anchor, and so I usually populate that link out in the Facebook feed, and you can listen to it, like I said, directly from Instagram if you're not into the whole subscription thing, but I wish you would. And once again, always a kind word. I love some of the reviews that have been left in iTunes. Appreciate you guys putting that stuff out there. It's been very, very nice. Of course, this weekend, one of the reasons why DigiCon was this weekend, well, we're not at Celebration Anaheim. And as I was kind of going over some of the feeds of the socials this weekend and seeing some great pictures people were putting out, just some amazing memories coming back. And I started kind of finding some of those pictures, and I may start posting some of them. I did one on Twitter earlier this morning. Such an amazing time. A great number of friends. And I was there for 8 hours at Celebration Chicago. Want to talk about making the most of it. From beginning to end, it was amazing. I have plans to go back to Celebration Anaheim in 2 years. And like I said, who wouldn't want to go? It is pure concentrated Star Wars. But you know what? If you're in a place where you can't get to it, definitely connect with a lot of these other podcasts and folks on Instagram and Twitter and some of these socials, because a lot of times they have stories they're bringing back. They have people they're talking to. You know, one person can't cover all of Celebration. And I also tend to put these podcast links in the show notes, and I know I need to update on rebelbasecard.com some of that. Just because it's a lot of work to update that show notes page. But I always try to put links to the cool podcasts that I listen to in there, and that is by no means the full list. It's amazing the number of podcasts that are out there. I'm just very happy to count myself as one of them. So it's been a super crazy week, and I'm not that kind of podcast to where I can give you that insightful information and context, but it has been an incredible kick in the gut this week with the events that happened in Kenosha and around the United States. And it's very hard not to feel the pain. And then at the end of the week, Chadwick Boseman, once again, I'm not a Marvel podcast, but what an incredible actor and what an incredible human being to have lost at such an age of 43. And I think as I get older, especially when you see folks succumb and pass away at an earlier age than you, it really starts hitting home. And I just wanted to take a minute just to say, I loved him as an actor. I loved him in 42, loved him in Black Panther. From all aspects that I have seen and I have read, just an incredible human being. What a great loss. I really, at some point, hope 2020 ends at some time soon, just because it's been on some aspects, some levels, a very miserable year. But one of the things to kind of, bring us kind of out of this, is these connections that we make, whether you, you see it online or in your circle. And one of the things that I enjoy when I am doing podcasts and when I'm talking to folks, is that connection that you make. And, sometimes I wish I could talk to folks for the whole afternoon. I'll oftentimes, when I get done with an interview, feel like, man, can we just go to the pub? Can we just go get a drink after this? Can we just keep talking? Because I think it's very therapeutic. And I love listening to people's stories, and I love, reaching out to folks and, just hearing what they have to say. And sometimes it's just, it doesn't have to be, you set the world on fire, but just listening to your story, it really helps me out. And I hope that in some ways, you know, I don't know what this show does, but I hope maybe it can take you through a boring commute or a part of your day that nothing was going on, or maybe you just kind of really dig some of the content, some of the people that I get a chance to talk to. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe I know it's just one podcast of many, but I'm hoping that we're adding something here, and I appreciate any feedback I'm getting. I really love it when I hear stuff and see stuff. So it's just, once again, it's been a pleasure to get a chance to talk to you guys and produce some content for you. So anyway, enough with this. We will get into my conversation with Steve, and I'll talk to you on the other side.
We're in attack position now, sir.
Hold here.
We're not going to attack.
I have my orders from the Emperor himself. He has something special planned for him. We only need to keep him from escaping.
Because I actually work in a kind of print unit.
Right.
And I work the pre-press side of things. So I basically, I'm an art worker. And that means you prepare the files for print. You make them print ready so that you get the best possible finished product at the end from receiving the file. So that's my day job. But I've also got a background in print as well. So I've been printing. I started working in a print shop maybe about 15 years ago. And I had a design background as well. And the two kind of fused together, if you will. I found that I was doing more of the pre-press side of things, because you're getting files from all sources, all people, and they're 90% of the time they're not print ready. You know, it's like a JPEG, but it's not the right size. You know, it's square, but they a square JPEG, and they want it to fill in a, you know, a rectangular shape. It's just things like you always got, and it still happens. You know, even today. So the majority of the time when I'm working on that side of things on the Mac, making sure that, you know, the quality of the print is going to be optimal, basically. But every so often I jump onto the machines as well. I mean, I operate them all, which is good, because having been able to do those two jobs means that you know what that machine's capable of. You know what's going to produce the best output, basically. Because a lot of designers nowadays, I think, design for web more than print.
Right.
And there is a big difference, you know, because, you know, the amount of times people have designed something for me, they've sent it, we've printed it, and then the colors aren't right. And it's because they say, well, it looks great on my screen. You're like, well, you've designed this, it's RGB for your monitor, but the printers we use are obviously CMYK, and there's conversion going on there. And some colors, it can just throw them way out. Some, it kind of converts them fairly easily. But yeah, it's an issue that I have to deal with on a daily basis. But it's also good, the two sides of the job, because I'm not just sitting at a Mac 5 days a week. You know, once or twice a week, you need to go and finish that book off, and I'll print it off and all that kind of stuff, or, you know, finish it, doing the cutting and binding and all that kind of stuff. So, it's a job I enjoy. You know, it's problem solving quite a lot of the time, you know, so it keeps your brain active, you know. So, yeah, that's my kind of background in that way, you know. That's that, you know.
But that, you know, that experience does lend itself, you know, when you're doing projects that, even like with a podcast, you know, I have a production background, and so even though I don't have a professional studio, if I was trying to get to the end product, I'm like, I know ways I can get there. You know, like this distance, I can cover this distance and then later on fill in the holes. And so, you know, when I'm kind of looking at some of your work, and that's what, you know, it's one of those where it's been really interesting starting this process, you know, with Instagram and the podcast and all that, to see, you know, you start with, you know, your classic trading cards, and then you kind of find these folks like yourself that are doing, and they to me, it looks like a labor of love where I love these things so much that I'm going to start trying to make them. And then there's a whole problem solving thing, like you're saying, of, all right, I want to try to make it look like X, Y, or Z. And then going through that. But I want to come to that, but I kind of want to start with, you know, you're a bit out there. You know, where the distance, the time difference is about 6 hours for us, but
yeah.
Where do you kind of come into Star Wars at, just to kind of give folks kind of a frame of reference?
Very young. I was born in 84, so I just missed Jedi, you know, but I rode that wave of, you know, as everything was going out the door, I was riding that wave. So I still caught on to Star Wars at a very young age. And I can remember vividly, I would have been 5, possibly. And it was back then when you had the big Christmas movie, you know, before you had your Netflix and Prime and all that. And they would advertise this movie all month. It was like the big Christmas movie. And that year it was Return of the Jedi. Because it took years from a film, you know, I mean, this is before what you had, this kind of cable like you have now. The film would be out from the cinema 5 years before it would come on TV, you know, especially, well, here anyway. So the big, it was the first time Return of the Jedi was getting shown, and it was a big Christmas movie. And I had a couple of the figures. Again, this is before you had eBay and people would sell their old toys. They would just give them away. So, like, my mother would come home from work and her colleague, she was a nurse, would say, you know, my kid's outgrown this stuff. There you go. And there was some Jedi stuff in there. I didn't know what it was. I just thought it was, like, some pig, green pig guy with an axe, you know. But I was like, this guy looks cool, you know. I was, you know, so I saw this advert and I was like, wait a minute, that, I've got that guy. I've got a figure for that guy. So I was psyched for this film. And we always spent Christmas at my grandmother's house. So that's when the film was shown. So we'd set the VCR to record it on the timer. But I think I must have moaned and begged so much on Christmas Day that they just let me put it on just to shut me up. And I just remember sitting there watching this film. I hadn't seen any of the other films. For me, this was the only film there really was, but I just loved that movie so much, and it had such an impact on me. And then watching that recording that I had on it, I think I wore the tape out, you know, and I still wish I had that, you know, with the adverts or the commercials, you know, that, right, they had. Because, you know, I watched that tape so many times, and it was all the kind of Christmas commercials and stuff. If I could find that broadcast, it would be, oh, I'd love that. But from then, you know, I started exploring Star Wars. And even though a lot of my friends weren't into it, because you're talking, this is, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, kids weren't really into Star Wars, you know. But there was a kid in my class who was, he had older brothers. And I went over to his house and he had, like, everything. You know, he had the AT-AT, the Falcon, and it was like, wow. And through him, we kind of made this bond, a Star Wars bond, you know. And we would go together to, there was a vintage kind of toy shop in Glasgow, a model shop. And that the owner had this bucket full of Star Wars figures, loose Star Wars figures. He had carded ones as well and all that stuff, but I was just this young kid, and these figures were like £1 each, so that's like nothing, you know, even back then that was nothing. And he also had a bucket full of weapons, and he said, if you can find the weapon that corresponds to that figure, you can just have it, you know. And he had this, and I don't know if this was an official thing, but there's this really cool poster. And it was like all the Star Wars figures just lined up all the vintage ones with their weapons. So that was like a kind of checklist. So you would find like a scout trooper and go, right. And you'd have, right, what kind of gun? Oh no, it's this tiny little thing, you know, this tiny wee gun that's got to be in this bucket. And you would sit there for like all afternoon digging through these buckets. Yeah, so a poor mother had to stand there while I was going through. She actually became kind of friends with the owners because, like, we were in there every Saturday, you know, for about an hour or two. And he gave me, it was my birthday one year, and for my birthday, I wanted the scout walkers, and he dug me one out. And he cleaned it all up for me, and he actually found a box, pretty beat up box, where he put that in. So I got that as well, and I've still got that to this day.
Nice.
You know, I've got all my Star Wars stuff. I'm not a hoarder, but the Star Wars stuff you can't take that away from me. So and that's now my kids' toys. They play with them now as well. But it's been fun because. Like my son Luke, obviously, he's got into Star Wars in the last movie there. I took him to see Rise of Skywalker, and even though he'd seen the other ones, I think the big screen must have just melted something in his brain that just blew him away. And he's been Star Wars crazy since. And I was like, your old man has got a treasure trove for you upstairs in the attic. So. I dug them out and cleaned them up, and would look for, you know, maybe the missing parts on eBay. I did do something that the guys that you had on a couple of weeks ago, the Gonk Toys guys, they'd probably flame me right now, but I just got some like repro stickers. When I heard that podcast, I was like, oh, I did that because it's my kid's going to play with it. It's not going in a display shelf or anything like that. I'm not going to spend $100 on a vintage decal sheet to stick on this Falcon that's probably going to sit outside for a few days, you know. So I did them all up for him and got them all working. And it's cool to see him playing with these things, you know. They've definitely got their money's worth, these toys. I mean, I was the second owner of them. He's the third owner of them. You know, who knows how long these toys will get passed down the generations, you know. So having a lot of fun with that. I'm sure you are as well, because I know you were doing your Bespin set, you know, and you were saying it's a kind of similar thing, tracking down the little PCs and all that. It's another labour of love, you know, but it's fun. It's fun doing these things, you know, we projects and all that, you know. So, going back to your question, Star Wars has always been there. I've always been into it. Always. A lot of people think, because of my age, maybe I grew up with the prequels, but no, it was the originals. I mean, I watched them, as I said, from when I was about 5 years old. And it would be a, you know, when you were a kid back then, you would watch a film. I remember watching A New Hope. First time I got that, we rented it when I found out there was more Star Wars films. And we rented it from the video store, and I can remember my parents had their friends over, so I was put upstairs out the way kind of thing, and I had A New Hope to watch. And I remember, I mean, that's like a 2-hour movie. As soon as that finished, I just rewound that sucker and just watched it again, you know. And I was just like, there was no thought process behind it, like, right, well, I'm watching that again, you know. So I've always been pretty fanatical about Star Wars, you know, and yeah, even now I'm still just as into it. I maybe wouldn't be as knowledgeable about even the new stuff if it weren't for my kid, because he's exploring everything Star Wars, you know. He's wanting to consume it all, the cartoons, you know, the toys, everything. He's right into that. So it's cool to see, you know, that we've got this kind of this thing with Star Wars. But yeah, he's crazy for it.
That brings an interesting question, because you know, whereas now between, you know, Netflix and Disney Plus and in the internet, you know, your kids are exposed. It's all sort of a common ground. Even, you know, we know that Disney Plus didn't get to the UK until March of this year, but everybody kind of caught up. But in, I'm sure in your day, and you'd probably help me kind of give some of my listeners a concept of what were some of, you know, like, obviously you had the programming, local programming there, but what kind of Western, you know, movies, TV shows outside of the big ones, you know, what kind of helped kind of shape your world as far as, you know, pop culture and whatnot in growing up besides Star Wars, to kind of give us an idea of what you would have been able to have access to?
Yeah. Well, all the big movies we got, you know, just the same as you would have, granted a few months later on. So for me growing up, I mean, I was big into superheroes. That was my thing as well. I grew up with the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. They were actually like not on par with Star Wars, but I mean, they were something I would go to all the time, with the first two especially, Superman movies, and your 89 Batman was a big deal as well. But you would find that I got into a lot of shows, sci-fi shows, that maybe weren't of my era. But I remember on one of the channels, I mean, here in the UK, back then you had four channels one through four. And on a Sunday morning, they would show these kind of old American TV shows. And it would be from about 9 in the morning through to the afternoon. And it would be like Happy Days, the Planet of the Apes TV series. Mm-hmm. What was the one? The Land of the Giants, Mission Impossible. So I kind of grew up watching shows like that as well, even though people find that maybe slightly strange. But Sunday mornings were every week I would watch all these. And then Little House on the Prairie came on, and that was time for my sister to come in and watch that, and I would just go outside or something. I've also got a thing for, I love monster movies. If it's got a big monster in it, I'm into it. The Harryhausen films, you know, all the kind of stop motion films. I mean, you always kind of relate these to like a Sunday movie, you know, and they used to show them a lot when I was growing up. So I saw like The Clash of the Titans, and I was blown away by all these films. But they also showed the Godzilla movies as well. Your kind of Showa era ones, which are the, you know, the 70s and the kind of the rubber suit, if you want, kind of guys. I know they're all pretty much rubber suit guys, but these kind of the old cheesy ones, they would show them horrendously dubbed, of course. But I've always loved those kind of films, you know, like these kind of practical effects, if you will, you know, because that's where they were. And there was from all around the world. I mean, there was the Japanese suit motion, and then you had Harryhausen doing the kind of these incredible models, you know, and they had so much atmosphere to them. And I almost seem kind of biased saying it. I mean, I am biased, but we're watching Clash of the Titans, the original one. There's so much atmosphere, and there's so much, you know, and you're so invested in the film. And then they did the remake, and it felt kind of hollow, you know. I don't know. It just doesn't. Maybe it's just me, my age. You know, I'm sure like kids watching the new Clash of the Titans would think it was amazing, and the one I watched was like, that looks like a stupid toy that's getting moved about, you know. So it's all subjective. But I grew up watching those kind of movies. Like I said, a big monster fan. Jurassic Park as well. I mean, Jurassic Park was probably my most memorable movie experience ever, I think. You know, I mean, that film was something else. You know, I mean, even just the hype about Jurassic Park was unbelievable. You know, that summer, 93, I think it was. It was just dinosaur crazy. I loved dinosaurs growing up. I mean, I even did a project at school about dinosaurs in my spare time. That's how cool I was. It wasn't even an assignment. It was like, I did this project that had so much work in it, and it was, I just did it on my own because I love dinosaurs, you know. So the fact that they were bringing out, you know, this big budget movie was like so exciting, and it was one of the few times that all four of us went to the cinema, and every single one of us loved it. You know, it was all we could talk about, you know. So Jurassic Park was a big influence in me as a child as well. Like I say, if it's got spaceships, big monsters, you know, fun things like that, I was into it, you know, growing up. I've always been a collector. Before anything else, I'm a collector, just like you guys, most of your listeners, you know. I just love to collect things, you know, that I love. And I love movies, so I love everything to do with them, you know.
One of the things, you know, in discovering your channel, you can see that passion come through, and you must have collected cards, I would have to imagine. Do you remember how far that goes back?
Again, fairly young. I remember collecting the Turtles, the Teenage Mutant Hero or Ninja, depending on where you lived. Turtles cards, the animation. And I also collected the Batman 89, so I don't know which one would have come first, but probably about around about the similar time. So I did collect cards from a young age. I would maybe go to the newsagents in the morning with my dad. He was getting the morning paper, and you know, I'd pick up a couple of packs of the Turtles or the Batman cards. So yeah, I've collected from a young age, and I went through my childhood really. I know, like you guys over in the States, sports cards is a huge thing. Over here, you don't really get sports cards as much. It was stickers. So it worked the same way, but you got a pack, a sealed pack, and it'd be 10 stickers, and you had an album, and they were numbered, and you just filled up an album. It was just the same premise, really. You know, you would spend your lunchtime trading stickers with your friends, you know, so that was throughout my childhood. Yeah, I collected a lot of non-sport cards. Jurassic Park was a big one for me. I remember collecting that. So I collected to a point, and then it probably tailed off, you know, getting into my kind of teen years. I was big into comic books for a long time. You know, read a lot of comics. So I kind of drifted away from the trading cards, but I was always in comic shops like every week picking up comics. And, you know, I'd pick up a, you know, I'd have a hobby box on the counter. Cool, I'll pick up a couple of packs of that. So I did still collect, but not, I wasn't finishing sets or anything like that. But I would go to comic cons, and, you know, they would have, you know, a stack of Superman cards, you know, just random cards for $5. You know, I'd pick them up. And so I have always had cards around, you know. And, you know, sometimes on eBay you'd see an auction, it'd be a bunch of Jedi cards or whatever. I would buy them, you know, something I never had as a kid. But yeah, I've always had them around, and I have collected. More so now, over the last few years, I've basically gone back to filling a lot of gaps. I mean, I don't collect many of the new cards. My kid does. He's into the, he likes the Journey to whatever. What was it? He loves those cards because it's got all the films and the set. You know, it's not just that one. It's not just that one film. You know, so I like those cards as well because they are kind of like the old Topps cards. You know, they do the right. Starfield and all that. So yeah, we buy them, and he collects stuff. So what I do for my collecting, I basically fill in any gaps I've got. So I finished off like my Superman 1 and 2. I love those cards. So I've been finishing them off and stuff like that. And again, because I'm now doing this card thing, I like to just buy packs from eBay now and again, and just to look at them, see how they've done them, you know, a bit of research, you know. So I got into cards basically, but I didn't collect as hardcore during my teen years, I must say, because it was all comic books. It was just going to the comic book store every Thursday, as over here it was. That was my main focus growing up, you know.
And it's interesting, you know, you have kind of been picking these properties. You know, some may have had cards, some may not have. But we are kind of, you know, as what you've been saying, we've been kind of seeing kind of a glimpse of a lot of the influences, not only on, you know, the culture that you kind of absorbed, but, you know, you're kind of, it's almost like you're writing a bit of a love letter back to that generation to go, you know what, maybe they didn't get the props they needed, or, you know, I can kind of do this. It seems like we are kind of walking back through your history. You know, when you decided to start producing cards, what was sort of your goals at the time? It seemed like it maybe started as a project and kind of gotten a little more. Was it a proof of concept? What was, when you just started to try to make them, what was your thinking and reasoning behind it?
Well, it's actually kind of funny. I'm a big autograph collector as well. I've been doing that for years. So usually when I would get things signed, it would be at local comic conventions, you know, you'd have the guests turning up to. But that whole scene has changed somewhat, that a lot of the times now, if you want a signature from someone, you mail it in to a facilitator, or the, you know, people offer help to get things signed, you know. So even though we get quite a lot of comic cons in the UK, a lot of the guests that I would like to get their autographs, I would need to send a poster overseas, you know. And it was, so I'm sending, you know, these big movie posters or art prints across the pond. It gets costly pretty quickly. Especially if you get hit with a customs on the way back, you know, it's just like an extra slap in the face in that way. So I was doing a lot of autograph collecting, getting posters signed and stuff, and it was just costing way too much money. I mean, the shipping was costing more than the autograph, like I say. So I had to rethink that. Plus, when your kids kind of come along, your wall real estate kind of shrinks somewhat. So I was finally finishing these posters, you know, and I had nowhere to put them because I didn't have any wall to put them in, you know. So I kind of thought, well, you know, I've got all these trading cards. I collect trading cards. I could start just getting trading cards signed. You know, there's nothing easier than throwing a card in a mailer and sending it, you know, for a few bucks. You know, it's, and you're not going to lose your prized possession, you know, in the mail, or it gets crushed. You know, you're sending a trading card. So I'd started doing that last year, kind of middle of last year, and then quickly found that, you know, a lot of these films didn't have trading cards at all, you know. A lot of films, like, they would make cards for the sequels, but maybe not the original, mm-hmm. because they didn't know if it was going to be a hit or whatever. So yeah, I found that pretty quickly. I was like, right, well, I would love to get so-and-so's autograph, but there was no cards. So what started as a bit of a kind of fleeting thought. I thought, well, I've got a background in design. I've got a background in print. I could just make my own cards for myself, you know. I'll just make them look cool, and then get them signed. But what started as, like I say, a fleeting thought of doing this, I found myself kind of getting immersed and going down this rabbit hole, if you will. So I thought, right, well, if I'm going to do this, I want them to look right. I want them to look authentic. I want them to look like they came out when that movie came out, essentially. So a lot of research ensued in both design and the print. So it was actually autographs hunting that got me into starting to make my own cards. It kind of just went on from there, to be honest. I was starting to get into through the mail autographs. I'd heard, you know, I'd kind of been reading about that in some of the forums. I thought I could try that, you know. And there's nothing better than sending a card in an envelope, you know. So I started making these cards. But I had to, the biggest kind of hurdle for me was finding the right stock. I wanted them to look like the old Topps cards, you know. So that kind of printing stock isn't commonly used in print. I found this out. So I was contacting some of the paper suppliers, and they couldn't really help me out. But after a lot of research and testing out samples, I found the right stuff in my eyes. It's as close as I've ever found to the original Topps card. So I found a supplier of that stock, and it pays off in my opinion. I'm happy with the product, how the cards come out, you know. So from doing those through the mail cards, I started putting them on Instagram. I created an Instagram. I thought, right, I'll start posting some of my designs. Some of them, if I got them signed, I would post them. And yeah, I got a pretty positive response from people. You know, people were asking me to maybe make them a card for the exact same reason that I was doing it. You know, people say, well, I'm a big card guy, but you know, so-and-so is appearing at a convention, could you make me a card? And it's the exact same reason I was doing it, you know. So it kind of, from there, it kind of morphed into me just doing mini sets for a franchise, you know. So as opposed to doing one-off cards, I like to try and do a mini set. That can maybe feature, I always try and include maybe people that are active in the convention circuit so that people can get them signed if they want, and get certain scenes of the movies in that, you know, that are an integral part of the film. So yeah, it's basically just kind of rolled on and on. And I started doing it at the beginning of the year. So once I was actually up and running, the lockdown happened. I thought, as opposed to that, just putting a stop to everything, it gave me a wee bit more time to work on the cards and really throw myself into them. So, yeah, like you said earlier, it's a labour of love. It's something that I love doing. You know, it's a hobby. And I did start doing it. It's purely selfish reasons, just for myself, because I want the cards, you know. But it's cool when folk message me and say, you know, oh, I want those cards as well. I'm like, well, it's, you know, it's a compliment to me, but, you know, it's just the same reasons that I'm making the things in the first place, you know.
What's interesting is when I'm looking at the, you know, like the Ghostbusters or Back to the Future or the Shag or some of those, the Jurassic Park, and ones you know, you go back and like you said, you can't believe either the original, you know, the sequels may have had cards, maybe the originals didn't, but how dead on, like if I'm looking at a Back to the Future card or I'm looking at a Jurassic Park card, that's exactly how I would envision it. You know, the colors and the design, I think on the Back to the Future, there was, you know, the clock is in the corner and you're going, that's brilliant, because, or the, you know, you have like the yellow and black stripes on the Ghostbusters one, you're going, that's exactly how I would expect it. And you see that flare. So there is that, there's that detail on it as I'm holding, you know, you were nice, kind enough to send me, some examples and I'm looking at it going, you know, the cardstock feels about right. You know, the, cause you have that darker, stock on the back has that matte finish to it, but then I'm looking at it going, this is, you know, but also, and by the way, the, you know, the Wonder Bread one, that, which you can't see cause I got this background, but that one goes back near and dear to my heart because I remember those Wonder Bread cards, you know, being in the loaves of bread and, you know, not only amazingly not protected, but also the design of it is really, it was really a good card. It was done by Topps, but they didn't, you know, they didn't put their name on it. But, you know, it's such a great design that it was fun to see that put back in. And in this case, you're using it for Billy Gibson of ZZ Top. It's just in looking at that. And then even then, you know, you did a takeoff of a Mandalorian. Now, we're going to be getting, you know, the Mandalorian cards later this year. But even then, you know, here's one where, you know, it has sort of a Land of the Lost feel to it. There's this throwback design to this card. And we'll get these cards up on Instagram. You can check your channel, of course. But it does have that feel to it that, you know, it harkens back to that. So on the one hand, you're using these elements to create something that, you know, this is how that would look and feel. But, you know, you would know if someone looked at this, they go, oh, I didn't, you know, you wouldn't realize they weren't those cards, unless you start looking back and going, oh, this is, you know, it was produced this year. But, you know, what a great way to make something. And now once you have them, like you're saying, well, now I just can't have one. Now I've got to have sets, as that collector mentality kicks in to go,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, totally. And that's why the sets that I'm doing now are, I do generally, it's a 9-card set. So it looks good in a binder, you know.
Thank you.
I know you love your binders. I've seen the photos of them. The only exception was the Ghostbusters set I did. But again, I made it an 18 card set, and you know, I might down the line the sets that I've done the 9 cards for. I might do like a sequel, a series 2, you know, and continue and do another 9. I might do that down the future if people are wanting them, you know. But like you say, it's the collector mentality, because, as I said, I do this for myself and I'll keep doing it for myself, but it's just been really rewarding hearing positive feedback from people who want them as well. So, you know, that was just recently, like as of last week, I've kind of made them available to other fans as well who are same interest and they want to get their card signed. Or one of the biggest compliments of, you know, I kind of get is I did a Jaws set for the first movie and they did cards for Jaws 2 and Jaws 3D, and someone got one of my Jaws sets and said, you know, oh, that they look great in the binder with my Jaws 2 and 3 cards, you know, you've got that 9, the 9 sheet with the cards there. Oh, it was great with the, it's a great companion piece, you know, that's what I'm shooting for, that's what I really want. That's the goal, basically, is just a companion piece. It's the cards that you never really got that I'm trying to produce here. Again, generally I make cards for films that didn't have cards. There's been a couple of exceptions. Talking about Jurassic Park, I redid the set. Even though I loved the set, the top set, I collected that back in the day. I love collecting them, but it was more of a love letter to Jurassic Park. I thought, you know, I'll do my own spin on it. There's actually a couple of wee Easter eggs in the cuts to the originals as well. Because I like to do things like that, I guess. But yeah, it's a labour of, and all the cards that I make are films that I love, you know. So I do like to put in nods to the film and to the design of the card. I mean, you're kind of limited because it's a 3.5 by 2.5 inch canvas, you know, and 90% is taken up by a movie still, you know. So, but there is a lot to work with. You might not think it, but there is a lot to work with because it sets the tone of the whole card, you know. And the back print as well, I obviously designed that. And that is just as time consuming as doing the front side, you know, because I want the backs to look just as cool, you know. So, I've also incorporated something else into the sets I do. You get a checklist as well. Because nice. I need the checklist to come back. I need the checklist back.
You need the checklist, yep.
Yeah. So I like, even though there's only like 9 cards in it, I still do a checklist because like, again, it's a nod to the old days, you know. So I'm definitely more, even though I think new cards that come out are great, you know, with our spot UV lamination and all that, you know, they look great, but I'm more of a vintage card guy, and that's generally where I steer myself, you know.
That does kind of lend into the logo, and one of the things, you know, being a graphic designer, you are very conscious of branding, and can you talk a little bit about the ray gun and your logo and how that kind of came to pass?
Well, again, it kind of plays part in wanting to make the cards look authentic. Was the cards that we collected all had, you know, it was Topps or Donruss, it was something, you know, the cards came from somewhere. And I thought, well, I want to have a company on this as well. So as part of the challenge, really, I thought, well, I'll have some fun with it. I want to make a brand, you know, for the cards, just as opposed to just having them as a no-name card. So the idea for Ray Gun, it's not even that interesting, but it's just, I'm a sci-fi guy at heart. I mean, I love all genres of film, but I'm a sci-fi guy. A lot of the cards I was doing were sci-fi related to some extent. So nothing much cooler than a ray gun, you know. So I thought it tied in pretty well, but it gave me an idea to start. Aside from doing the cards, I thought, well, I can have fun doing a bit of branding. It's something I don't get to do in my day job. So, yeah, I can come up with logos, do a wee bit of illustration work on it and stuff. So, yeah, that was just a kind of a side project to my side project, if you will. But I've had fun with the brand, you know, and, yeah, I might do it. Maybe there's some more things with it in the future, you know, we'll see.
I also like on the, on one of the posts, and this is something, you know, you see this in comics or you see this in print and you would know what this is right away where, you know, I'm looking at the one where you have the actual gun there and then you have the, you know, there's the print, there's the print on it, but in some cases you'll see in a print, it's just slightly offset, right? You have like where there should be, you know, where, the, you know, there's supposed to be green on the starburst, but it's just slightly off, or you know, and that I think even adds some, because now when you're working in digital, you know, just like with songs, right, you can go back and make things absolutely perfect, but there is that sort of that throwback to just a little bit of imperfection or something that just adds that color and that character to it, which is just something I really like, and it really plays well off of that, you know, the cardstock background on that. So it really makes it look like, you know, this is something I just created and it looks like it was something that was done 50, 60 years ago, but it was something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm really aiming for there. I like, as you're talking about the imperfections in your printing, there's a charm about it, you know, that I didn't want to lose. One thing I wanted to lose was, terrible registration that you used to get in your car. shops. I mean, there was nothing more annoying than you'd open a pack and you'd be like, oh no, especially if it was a card that you really wanted and it's like off to the right, hanging off the card, you'd be like, oh great. So that was one thing I wanted to get rid of. But yeah, like you're talking about the on the wax wrapper, first, I'm guessing it was in the printing process, the registration never seemed to match up, especially on wax wrappers. They were always all over the place, you know. So I had to basically just recreate that digitally, as you say. I mean, the cards that, you know, that we collected back in the day, they would have been printed, litho printed. I mean, they're still litho printed, I'm presuming, because that process uses your printing plates, you know, for the four separations, because they give them away as incentives now, don't they? Like printing plates are apparently used. So they obviously still print them like that. I print my cards digitally, which is what I use, I've used before. And the process of that is similar. Digital printing has come a long way, especially in recent years. And the aim for digital printing is to a cost-effective way of printing litho. Because to get something litho printed is very expensive. To get plates made up is very expensive. You basically get that done if you're running thousands and thousands of, you know, cards, whatever, you know, was getting printed. So digital printing tries to replicate the quality of litho printing. And it's not like an inkjet or laser printer. It's it uses toner. It's like your CMYK toners, like you would get on the colours of a print press, and you would the machine heats the toners like a powder. So the toner goes into the machine, and the transfer unit heats up the toner and applies it onto the card. So I digitally print all my cards, but there's no way I'd be able to get them printed. You know, I would be having to sell my house to get them printed, you know. So, but the digital printing, like I say, it's well over here anyway in Scotland. There are litho printers still in business, but it's only cost effective if you're getting high volumes run off, not 50 cards. So.
And how, you know, when you set up your storefront, and this is at the, if I look at it, raygun cards.store, is it Store Envy or envy.com?
Store Envy, yeah, Store Envy.
So is that, how do you getting them, like, how are you accommodating for, I'm assuming you're accommodating for shipping and handling costs like that. Did that kind of bring another aspect to of how, all right, I've printed this, I've got these out, how do I get them to a customer that is probably not in Scotland?
No, well, what I'm actually sending them directly from my house. I'm actually kind of just, so what I'm doing is I did a lot of research because I was getting a lot of people asking, could they buy sets from me? So I thought, right, I'll give it a try. So a few of my sets I ran some copies off, and the Store Envy process is, it's essentially a marketplace for artists and people, you know, hobbyists and stuff like that. But it's, I just do everything myself because it's actually really, it's cheap to send cards out, you know. But I did do a lot of research into how I was going to package the cards, how I was going to ship them, because at the end of the day, I want the people that are buying, who want to buy a set of cards from me, to get them how I would want to receive them, you know. So I put a lot of time and effort into researching how to get them to the customers as efficiently and as safely as possible. So, yeah, basically there's a whole packing process for me because I number all the cards. I limited them to 50 sets. I think that was enough. So I do 50 sets and they're hand numbered. I'll sleeve all the cards and they go into like a rigid top loader that's just the right size for the cars. They get bagged and then, yeah, I send them securely away. But shipping's actually fairly cheap. I know the majority of people that want to possibly buy them is over in the States. So I've tried it as cheap as possible, you know, because I just want people to get the cards, to be honest with you. So it's a pretty cost effective way of doing it. And I've not had any issues, touch wood, so far with it, you know. So, but I was having a few issues with the store end. I've never actually launched anything like that online before. But, it was a bit of a, it was an experience for me, changing DNS settings and all this kind of stuff. I'm quite tech savvy, but see, when it comes to coding and stuff like that, I'm lost with that. In fact, so I was having a bit of an issue because I've got a domain name and you can link that to your store, but I'm still having technical issues with that, so I'll get that ironed out. But yeah, everything seems to be up and running okay. As I said, I only opened the store like a week ago, I think. So it seems to be going okay, I think.
And I'm assuming that you would have, you know, based on, well, if we kind of move forward based on its success or so forth, I think that would probably lend you to go, all right, I'm going to continue to maybe look for new opportunities. Or do you think you would go back to some of the sets for like a one or like a second or third batch? How do you think you're going to be handling that?
Good question. I think I've got a few ideas for new sets in the works. I've got a list of films that I would love to do sets for. So there's always going to be a set in production, a new set, essentially. However long that takes me depends on life in general, you know. But yeah, I think that I would go back and maybe do some sequel sets if people are wanting them, you know. I'll do it. But I've got a few ideas. I'm working on some new sets just now. Won't give anything away, but we're getting near Halloween, so maybe some spooky related sets I'll be working on to come out for that time. But that's the easiest part of the whole process is thinking of a movie, because there's so many of them, you know, and you're like, I'd love to do a set for that. And I can't watch a film now thinking about it, you know, going, I could do a card set for this one, you know. There'll be new ones coming over the next weeks, I think.
And where can people find you? I know I found you on Instagram, but where can people find you on the socials? And are there other places you're thinking of kind of helping to brand yourself?
Well, I'm most active on Instagram. That's what I started. So anyone could find me on Instagram, and it's at RayGunCards, all one word. I've got a Facebook page as well, which I believe is facebook.com/RayGunCards again. And the store that you mentioned is RayGunCards.storeenvy.com. So I've got them up and running just now. I've not got any plans to expand social media. I'm not actually a big social media guy. Like, I had to create a Facebook page to create a Raygun page, if you know what I mean, because I don't know. I've never really been a huge social media person. So just now, I mean, that's where I am online, if anyone wants to find me. Most of the links are on the Instagram page anyway, I think. But if anyone's got any questions or whatever, yeah, just, you know, hit me up and I'll get back to them, you know.
Excellent. I wanted to thank you for coming on, and like I said, it's one of those where I think as you follow people, you know, and on Instagram and some of these other channels, and you start seeing some of these, you know, these ideas and things kind of blossom and move along. You know, the obvious next step is I love finding about these, you know, like I said, the classic cards are amazing. You know, to see them being made from scratch, and you're going, wow, what a great idea. And then you see the development of this, and you go, it goes from just one or two cards, like you said, to now I'm making sets. Now I'm, you know, it's great that we have, you know, the opportunity to kind of not only follow, but, you know, hopefully wish you success. I did have one more question, and I wanted to save this. It's one of those where it's kind of hard when you're coming in cold. But you know, it's one of those that I'm just dying to ask, you know, because in the States, you know, we're very poor. There's a couple things that we do really horribly. And one of them is the metric system, and you guys would be in the same boat, but geography would be another one where, you know, just Americans have no idea where anything is, let alone a state down there. But it comes into, you know, like what we see as far as like what culture is thrown in front of us. And I don't want you to, you don't have to speak for your country, but how annoyed are you about the Irish People Taste YouTube channel? I watched it once and it's in my feed constantly. And I have to think, like, you know, other countries in the UK have to go, you know, it makes it sound like they're on the other side. You know, they're on the moon. Like, oh my gosh, donuts!
Do you know what? I've never actually seen it. But yeah, there's some things I kind of misconception, I guess, that you live in Scotland. You know that you're living some middle aged. I've been to the States a few times, yeah, and. Again, I don't know if someone was just trying to be funny, but they couldn't believe that we had TVs, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, check out who invented them. But, yeah, I guess there'll always be that kind of stigma, I guess, but it's not like that at all, I can assure you.
Well, yeah, and also I'm also thinking of the history. It's like, well, you know, for folks in the States, I think the history of Scotland basically goes from the movie The Highlander. And somehow it ends up with the Proclaimers. That's pretty much, Mel Gibson is in there somewhere, and he's not even Scottish. And you go, that's basically what I think America knows about Scotland. It's like, all right, the Highlander was a cool movie, Sean Connery, you know. And then you have, you know, this, and I was even going down a rat hole with the Proclaimers, going, oh yeah. And then they're still, I'm like, yeah, if you can make a career off of basically one song, go for it. And it seems like that it's just endearing, but it is kind of funny that, you know, it's like you have so little knowledge of an area. And then you just get stuck with.
I think you guys love Andy Murray, don't you? I mean, God, last two times I was over in America, it was, oh, Andy Murray, yeah. Like, yeah, because, you know, the tennis player, you know. But, yeah, there's more people than that. Yeah, it's just one of these things, you know. Yeah, it's just like a city like any other, I guess. You know, we're becoming more like America as the years go on, to be honest. You see a lot of your guys' culture comes pouring in over here. It's something that becomes more evident as the years go on, you know. We've got Taco Bells now. That's something that's opened up here. You're like, oh, well, you know, I think there's a Wendy's as well. So, yeah, we're getting there.
My mom was always like me, like a big fan of accents. I could probably listen to you all day long just reading whatever. Can just get the TV guide and read it. Just because anything, you know, we have, of course we have accents, you know, here in the States and so forth, but it is fun to kind of listen to something else and you go, oh man, that's just really, really cool. But anyway, so there, I'm just going to fanboy out on the accent, but at any rate, but anyway, and, so yeah, I appreciate you being on. This was fun. This won't be the last time we have you on. I got to get you back on. And sure. I really hope it's as successful as you want it to be, because, you know, it can get to a point, either it gets too success, you know, you get too much of a demand, you go, well, now it's work. So it's less of a passion project, more of a labor instead of a labor of love. But I hope you find the success that you want out of this, and that, you know, I think you probably just be like, just allow me to make enough to where I can keep going, but then have a little bit, you know, for the effort. I think that's probably what I would hope you'd hope for, or you could say, I want it to be, I'm going to incorporate tomorrow, you know, next week and where we go.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I really do. And I know you've kind of been following me from quite early on as well. So, I appreciate your words there. But thanks for having me on. It's been a blast. And thanks for your show, for everything you do, because I probably speak for a lot of people that you make the commutes and go in a little bit quicker. And when I'm working as well, I'll listen to your show. So, no, it's... Thanks from your listeners, you know, for the content, your labor of love, should I say.
Thank you.
No problem.
Once again, I want to thank Steve for being on the program tonight. It was a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk with him and learn more about his effort in getting those ray gun cards out into the world. I hope you get a chance to check out his storefront and definitely get on his Instagram page. Give him a little love there, and all the best to him. It was a pleasure once again. Just had a great conversation. If you have any feedback for tonight's episode, good, bad, or otherwise, you can reach out to the show in a number of ways. You can leave a comment on the Instagram post for this episode. You can also DM me at RebelBaseCard on Instagram. On Twitter, you can also find me at RebelBaseCard. You can email the program, greg@rebelbasecard.com. You can also find me on Facebook at RebelBaseCard. You can find the show notes for this and all episodes on the website, RebelBaseCard.com. In the Star Wars Card Trader app, you can find me at CornFedTech. I use the hashtag CardSquadron, not only for a way to put the word out on cool cards and card collecting, but as a way to hopefully bring the community a little closer together. We collect, communicate, and commiserate when we run out of credits to spend in the app. Join in on the fun. Plus, well, all the other cool squadron names were already taken. We collect as one, and would be honored if you would join us. And if you are a sketch card artist or Star Wars artist or collector, cosplayer, want to talk about your work, your craft, your passion, please drop me a line and maybe we can work something out. I'd love to get a chance to hear your story. You can also help out the show by leaving a comment and review on iTunes or wherever you get this podcast from. Otherwise, I implore you, keep those cards out of the hands of the Empire, folks, and I'll talk to you soon.
The music for this podcast is brought to you under a Creative Commons license from Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. This is Discipline off the album The Slip.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.